Show me love, show me love. Right, guys, welcome to Just Play Podcast. Here with me is Andy Aitken, and I am Ryan Tricky. And we are going to be talking a little bit about 3-year-olds to national champion is the topic. So we're going to discuss our thoughts and views on that and how we potentially might get our future 3-year-old into as a national champion. So I'm going to hand you over to our fearless Andy Aitken, who's going to maybe give us a kick off a start. How would you start off, mate?
Well, thanks for that lovely intro, Ryan. So obviously I posed this question in the last podcast for those that obviously didn't potentially listen or have listened to it. So I threw you two questions, and obviously you've picked the one with the 3-year-old to national champion. So I think obviously, like any tennis coach, we're obviously going to be starting with invitation to Zed's child, boy or girl, obviously beginning their pathway, I guess, at a tennis club. It could be a school, could be some sort of school session. I say school session, obviously more like nursery. I don't personally do nursery sessions. I don't know whether you do in terms of tennis. Do you do
specific? We don't do nursery, but we do like a tots session.
A tots, yeah. We do a similar one at a tennis club where I am as well. So top session, obviously a lot of that, I guess, in that initial phase, certainly for me, is going to be coordination. It's going to be fun. It's going to be seeing whether they have agility. Very much from my perspective, is going to be probably just giving it a go and just seeing how they move. And I hate the term talent ID. I'll probably throw this at you in a second, but there's going to be some sort of like seeing whether they are good at something. And I guess probably the biggest thing we're always probably going to allude to when we're answering this question and going through the stages of development and age is, does talent beat hard work? So essentially effort, you know, can somebody have great talent and make it to a national standard? Or are we potentially looking at those that actually, you know, have potentially less talent, and talent being a very vague word, do they have to work a little bit hard? Of course they do, but if you are willing to go that extra mile and really put the hours on court, etc., you know, but yeah, essentially your 3-year-old session, Ryan, your talent ID, and are you
I'm basically going, you know, they come into it, like you say, an introduction. I think as we call it, the ABCs, I think it's agility, balance, coordination, speed. Just trying to get the fundamental coordination side and speed side going first. Just let them have fun circuits. Like you say, fun being the operative word, but trying to do repetition on stuff that's vital for us to coordinate racket to ball, basically. So that would be my first port of call. Like you say, we're going to allude to lots of different things, I suppose, as we go through this like podcast, chatting about, you know, hard work and talent, as you say. I would say, yeah, with our blue sessions, as we do at 3 to 4 year olds, I think that's got to be the first port of call. Lots of practice, lots of fun, lots of games. Would you say that kids at that age, when they come to a session, would go straight away and say, oh, you know, do you hear the comment, when are we playing tennis? Do you think that's obviously going to creep up quite a bit? I'll put that question out to you.
Classic. Yeah, I think that's not necessarily bespoke to that age category. I think that's a lot of things we hear in schools, isn't it? You know, we go through dynamic warm-ups and trying to get racket and ball very quickly and follow a little bit of the LTA pathway in terms of like the warm-up. But I think it's very much, yeah, the age-old question. Kids just want to hit ball, don't they? And they want to play what is envisaged the game as a game of tennis, hitting the ball over the net. So I think, certainly, I haven't had it in my tot sessions. Maybe you're obviously running more superior and much better tot sessions than I am, hitting real good balls over the net. But I think for me, yeah, getting some sort of racket and ball involved at that early age. And I think, again, probably a question for you, I'll answer it first in terms of that very early stage. Again, obviously, always trying to answer the question at heart here on the pod. For a national champion, what's probably going to be one of the key elements? Would I prioritize their coordination? Would I prioritize their movement? Is there just something that looks that little sort of twinkle in my eye? I'm like, oh my gosh, that that child potentially really has something going forward. So that very early stage, I think it potentially gives you hope, but there's obviously such a long journey ahead. I think we've been obviously in the industry for such a long time. I think for me, I'd probably prioritize their movement. If they're a good mover, that's a really good foundation. They may not have the greatest hand-eye coordination, but I think if they move really naturally and they're like a 360-degree athlete, they can move forwards, they can sort of move backwards and keep themselves steady, they can sidestep, they can naturally cross over. I think for me, at the tender age of three, that's probably like the thing that would probably really ring true to me. Actually, this is a child slash toddler that could start to maybe play the game really well. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, well, whilst I'm listening to you, I'm thinking I'd probably stick to the
Okay.
coordination route first. I think I'm more a case I'd like to see, being able to catch, being able to sort of start to see success with ball and racket. But like you say, if we don't have movement, I think that would probably definitely come as the second one, because I think once they've coordinated themselves and you can, okay, rightly or wrongly, just get them to stand. You're probably going to be standing them still and feeding balls to try and get them hitting first. So I think coordination, so experience a bit of fun of hitting the ball. And then probably I think I've moved them on to movement stuff. But like you say, I think we're probably going to be talking about a lot of movement stuff as we go through this because, the game gets harder, doesn't it? Right. And obviously, as they tend to get better and better at the game, the movements like patterns change, let's say, and the athleticism creeps in. And if that goes, then, so does the potential possibility of hitting better shots. So, okay, if we roll on then. So, yeah, I think we've both kind of sort of assumed that one. So, if we move on to our go through the LTA pathway, we go through to the red stages. So, that's for those listening, is between 5 to 8 years old. If we look at that kind of transition, what would you say is the changing points now? What's the developments?
I think there's potentially, say potentially, I think for me, again, we're talking, keep alluding to it, a national champion. Obviously, there's going to be an increase in volume. So there's going to be more hitting sessions, more lessons. That might be groups. I'd certainly probably at that, even that early stage, I would probably be going down the route of like 2 45-minute individuals. Again, obviously, all of this can be taken with a pinch of salt. You could go 3 half-an-hours. You could prioritize one more than the other. Everyone's doing it very differently, and obviously, we're trying to answer this from our experience. So, obviously, those listening, don't take what Ryan and I take as gospel. Please don't think this is ne necessarily going to be the way to get a child to national champion. This is potentially, if we're talking about a random child that obviously walks through to our club, this is how we would potentially try and do it. I think, yeah, volume, certainly quality, obviously starting to really embed good technique from 5 years old. So it's obviously starting to hit spin, even at a tender age of five. That's going to be really important. Perception. In terms of the structure of like goal setting and things like that, for me, I think that's still very much on the periphery. I personally wouldn't be doing that in the red bracket of 5 to 8 years old. I think that's still very much, there's obviously got to be a fun element. There's definitely going to be a competing element. So whether that's locally or regionally, certainly understanding competition, understanding, starting to develop things probably very intuitively, tactics, hitting cross court, playing with better flight. All of this hopefully becoming quite natural and certainly instinctive. So, and probably one of the biggest things will, again, probably a future pod, is probably that sort of that triangle of coach, player, and parents, certainly, or guardians, starting to really embed itself and having a good rapport. And certainly everyone, I guess, moving the same way would be my initial part of that. And obviously happy for you to expand in a second. But I think, yeah, volume and quality certainly now starts to start to go up.
Yeah, I think yeah, I'll align with that. And I think, obviously, thinking about like previous people that have got, sort of maybe close to that potential, you have had the lessons. I think the lessons are important to, like you say, to bed technique, and then the groups are there for the fun, the tactical kind of loose tactical kind of implications, and like you say, mass hitting basically with other players, because I think the social side of the game is what we need to definitely keep all our players interested, having fun, having what is an individual sport being more of like a team. So if you're in a group of eight or whatever it is, just those players getting to know each other socially and being able to have fun together whilst in volume, so that if they play date, how good would that be to have the volume part where we talk about the triangle, as you say, with the parents taking responsibility and maybe bringing some of those kids out just to have a fun 45-minute hit with a player once a week, you know, just start off the light kind of social side. I like you say, top spin, yeah, it is. I mean, that's it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I quite like to have, I mean, it would be lovely to have the top spin because it obviously has so many advantages. But obviously, quite hard for kids to naturally get, isn't it? It depends on your the child that we're saying here, what their standards like. So, I think for me, I think volume and hitting through the contact point and getting basic swing path, I suppose. At five, I mean, definitely early stages. Yeah, trying to get them to rally through basic swing path, rallying to sort of 10, 15, that type of thing will probably be an initial goal, just so they can. So I think once kids have got the coordination, the movement, and ability to kind of have a basic rally, they can play the game, which is, I think, the hardest part of our game, isn't it? It's just trying to get people to collectively have fun, you know, rallying the ball over to each other. You know, they can't control where they hit, so they, like you say, your movement patterns like kick in. So yeah, I think that's really important for me, is just getting the swing path, basic technique going, and then trying to get them to think about, you know, the other tactics, like, again, basic tactics, I would say, at the start of the game, just understanding of space and time. But obviously, we don't need to tell them right now at this stage for me. I think it was just exercises we set out. They might not know about it, but we're just demonstrating it, and they might, you know, like you say, they might learn it as they go. And then obviously with the volume practice you're saying, you know, we can kind of build it from there. Certainly towards like 7-year-old, 8-year-old, we need to be, I would say, in the competition element where we're having, you know, possibly loosely kind of playing a certain amount of matches, perhaps, you know, 20, like tw 20 or 40 matches by that time. And obviously having a certain amount of wins potentially. Because we've got to start at that early age understanding what the kid's going to be like under pressure and that kind of thing. But obviously, it's fun, isn't it? So.
Yeah, no, of course. It's like almost we're in sync because my next question to you, while I was thinking about that, you obviously came brilliantly onto the topic of sort of matches. I guess the question I was going to ask, whilst trying to think of an answer myself, was in that age bracket, how important is winning and losing? So we obviously have experienced ourselves as tennis coaches, a full range of tennis players. You know, wins have been super important for rankings and ratings and all the rest of it. Even at this tender age previously, I think the system has certainly changed and benefited from that change to be a little bit more about the social and obviously competing. But I think if I'm developing a player to national standard and I've got, again, that brilliant triangle of having a really good rapport with the player and the parent, I think actually for me, losses are probably the most important thing. Because if I can see a player's temperament under pressure and they're able to have enjoyed it, have learned something from it, regardless of winning or losing, I think that really, again, is a light bulb moment for me that this player can really develop. Now, I appreciate at 5 years old, and I'm saying this as we are parents as well, children aren't all that great with losing. I think that has come a little bit with culture and society. I think things have changed and made that harder. I think, you know, we've seen classic social media of people throwing controllers at TVs and things like that. And people take things very personally. Obviously, you know, back in the day when you and I played FIFA, probably one of us might have got a bit upset and, you know, all the rest of it. Probably me more than you. But I think when you're looking at back to that tennis player, I think if that child can really lose well, put that in the best definition as I can, I think that really sets a really good foundation. I don't know about you, but
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you say, we've both coached for a long time now, and we've basically seen lots of different personalities come through the door. And, you know, like you say, culture and society definitely have had an impact. And obviously, you know, we're going to see people that are naturally, like, you know, going to fall into that competition quite well, because they've had older brothers that have been already kind of riling them up or something like that, you know, having competition loosely in the background when they're playing swing ball or if they're playing football in the back garden, that type of thing, kicking a goal against each other, playing games, that type of thing. And you might have the person that has, you know, maybe not had that. And then it's kind of, they then go and have their first loss, and it's like a really hard thing to take. And I don't, you know, being five or being 35, I think it's losing's always hard, isn't it? So, for those guys, I think, yeah, I think winning's easy because you win. It's fairly easy to take. Hopefully, you can take, you know, your evaluation quite well. But I think your losses really tell a lot about the person. So, you know, if you lose and it means that much to you, it's kind of what they do off the back of that. And, you know, I don't know if you would agree, you know, you'd agree, but I've seen when I see a lot of players that tend to, like today, that kind of, you know, they go and do their first bit of competition. It's almost like they're, you know, shying away from competition because they want to shy away from negativity or like losing. And, you know, and that can have a quite a dramatic effect on them, like mentally, potentially. And in some cases, you know, they really don't like it. So it puts them off quite like competition for good. And, you know, I think obviously when we talk about the red session very quickly, I think competition's got to be fun. I think we've got to lay it out there that it's got to be, you know, whatever we set up's all about, you know, a big festival, quite fun. You know, they get to play matches, experience it. Maybe less so much about the evaluation at this point. I don't know, you know, if you disagree or agree on that, what would your take be?
I think the evaluation for me would be very much, I guess, as a coach would probably be using my ears, just listening to parent, listening to child, listening. And when I say listening, I'm obviously verbally hearing what they think back, but I'm also probably actually using my eyes and seeing what, you know, their reaction to that is. Certainly for the player on the court, you know, are they coming back the next week and wanting to continue to progress and actually right hitting, you know, a shot that they felt like that wasn't very good. Even that, you know, even at that a very early age, are they very self-aware to know that they can do something better? They may not know the specific reason of how to change it. That's obviously comes down to us as a tennis coach. But I think if they're able to problem solve, which is obviously probably what you sort of alluded to there, actually we're such an individual sport, trying to problem solve at that very early stage, I think again is such a hallmark for potential success. Again, trying to make them a national champion. So you're almost becoming hopefully a smarter athlete on the court. Trying to problem solve, trying to win matches. Look, and at the end of the day, as I'm sure you probably testify to your player, sorry, mentioned to your players, and we testify as coaches, actually, you know, you try and use Wimbledon as the model. Well, there's 128 players in the draw, but one person's going to lose, win, sorry. So 127 are always going to lose. So the chances of you winning that are always going to, and it's very similar to obviously the tournaments at our level. So you know, you go into, you have to experience losing. And yeah, I just think of that sort of that sort of age will happen. But I guess sort of transitioning now into let's say latter eight into 9 to 11 now. So I guess we're coming to the end of the Red Bull career. For me, late 8 years old, probably not changing too much, but I think probably what you'll maybe come on to now and sort of steer you would be sort of, okay, we're getting to 9 to 11. You know, grading tournaments are now coming in, they're kicking in, certainly where we are, obviously in England. And it's now becoming a bit more important, the rating, the ranking, to get you into higher graded tournaments. So, just interested to hear your thoughts in terms of now, as a tennis coach, how you would steer that player competitively, obviously training, maybe nutrition starting to come into it, even at a very early age like that. I mean, what are your thoughts on sort of all of that?
Yeah, so in terms of like, yeah, so 9 to 11, I think it's a really important age category that, you know, kids have already got to be established in, you know, technique, tactics. Like we say, you know, Andy Murray, Roger Djokovic, all those guys have grown up together at age 9, they're already competing at a high level. So, you know, I would say by 8, really, they've got to be quite close to that regional level. And then obviously 9 onwards, we're now talking a lot more about, yeah, maybe upping a little bit the ante with private lessons, perhaps, but obviously a lot more like still volume, and more maybe goal setting certain things now. So
I'd be looking into, you know, strength. We're watching them play matches and obviously starting to goal set around their game specifically. So it might be they're great at forehand top spins in changing direction and all that stuff, but their backhand is still feeling quite weak. So, you know, building the game that way. I still think in that kind of, as we kind of call it, that youth stage, I think it's important that we're kind of still nurturing, but we still also, you know, the level of expectation, I suppose, has got to be there as well, hasn't it? You know, they need to know what it looks like from another 9 or 10 year old at a graded tournament level, what that looks like, and then we've got to try and get close to that. So that's probably goal setting's definitely forming. I think the smarter players coming in there as well, as in teaching them tactics, you know, intelligence on court. Competition wise, we're going to be looking to probably add more competition in. I think previously, you know, and obviously what I would tend to say is if we're periodization, it might be we periodize training and then we periodize competition. So it might be like I'm going to periodize their play for training a certain technical aspect of their game for a few months with a little bit of competition. Then we might go into a competition phase where I'd be looking to kind of get them in a slightly lower graded warm-up tournament, let's say, to then work up to, you know, the Wimbledon. So kind of, you know, going Queens to Wimbledon, that kind of thing. It's like that slightly lower graded tournament, but then obviously then work up to a big tournament. So we'd have competition goals in there. And like you say, the LTA rating and ranking, we're going to always be trying to improve at that level. And then, like you say, nutrition-wise, I'd probably introduce a little, you know, a little by that, and maybe strength and conditioning at that point, you know, kind of giving them a little plan just to kind of get them into the routine of understanding what that means, and how they should be looking after their body a little bit better. But that's quite a, you know, a low, small part of the transition at the moment, because I don't want to, you know, overdevelop them and that type of stuff. I just want them to understand the routines they're going to have to develop into, if that makes sense. How about yourself?
Yeah, obviously just sort of listening and resonating with quite a lot of that. I think just trying to obviously pick the age category of this. Obviously we're referring to ball colours, and ball colours are always an interesting topic. I mean, obviously if we're talking about taking that player to national pathway, we're potentially depending on the ability of this person, I mean this child in question, probably jumping slightly earlier and transitioning ball colors maybe a little bit earlier. Obviously the earlier we can potentially get this player to yellow, the better, right? You refer to Andy and Roger and Rafa, you know, realistically, and I think there was a good video of Novak, if anybody's seen it on social media, when he was like 7 and bashing his racket on the floor, or might even been younger, but he was hitting yellow balls, you know. And we're lucky that we do have these color pathway to help with the, I guess, the bounce of the ball and the contact point, and obviously they have different compressions, but I don't think it again, it's always guidance, isn't it, essentially. So again, for anybody listening, please don't necessarily think Red Bull is going to be a certain age. Always contact sort of your local coach or whoever's teaching, and they will always advise better, as we will as well. But I think certainly that 11-year-old year five bracket, there's going to be, again, coming back to sort of that self-awareness, understanding about carbohydrates, protein, and things like that. And as you were talking, I was thinking actually about sort of injuries, because a lot of this is potential subject to growth spurts and lots of different things in their life, I guess. Not to mention injuries, there might be a home and family developments, etc. So we always have to be aware of. And again, crikey, we could go on so many different tangents like we normally do, but trying to keep it as mainstreams as we can, I guess. For me, like you're saying, S&C stretching is probably going to be being aware of it, being aware what to do. I certainly remember listening to sort of a podcast from Matt Little, who used to be Andy Murray's S&C guy, and I think works still with the LTA very, very closely. I think it's very much sort of just trying to do little bits with them, and as long as it doesn't visually look like it's wrong at that tender age, it's probably going to be okay. Nothing's going to hurt them unless it looks like they've got one hip above their head and the other one the other way. So I think even with my very little knowledge, I know you have more of an S&C background than I do, I think I'd certainly be touching on it and trying to push them that way. But yeah, it comes back to that question of sort of by this point, I guess, and maybe asking you the question, would we be worried as coaches if they weren't a national champion at this point? I think we're certainly looking at them being in the mix. If they were, I guess, question to you then, let's say they are now transitioning to yellow ball, so they're, you know, 10, maybe early years of 11, and let's say they have a ranking, again, this is very thrown in the air, number of 50 in the country. Do we as coaches think there's still a possibility for them to be there as opposed to being 150? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, would you look at somebody who's ranked 50 differently to somebody who's 150? How much is rank, or how much should ranking be important to a parent listening or a player listening right now?
I think rankings are important. Obviously, the higher you are, you know, the closer you are to the number one stage, right? But if you're 150, it doesn't mean to say you can't jump, you know, a fair few hurdles if you're putting the hard work in, versus the other person. I'm sure is putting hard work in, but it goes back to that hard work beats talent when sometimes talent doesn't work hard enough. So it might be that, you know, that 50 has worked fairly well through theirs, but that 150 just wants to work that little bit harder just to kind of, you know, get up there. And I would never say, even if you're even higher than that still, we're talking about national champion guys, and you know, national champion could be 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s. Do you know what I mean? It's technically that age category. So that's down to your goal setting with your coach, and it's down to the time frame that you're looking to become national champion. Obviously, if it comes earlier, great. I think at that kind of age, we're probably thinking definitely, you know, we've got a great chance at getting high heights. And I think you've just got to kind of creep through those rankings as best you can. Hopefully with your goal setting and kind of how you're setting up your coaching program for that child, will be important as to how they can, you know, can jump up the ladder. So I wouldn't necessarily, you know, rankings obviously mean something, don't they? But it doesn't mean to say that you can't jump that player. Let's say, I think we're probably going to get into the realms of consistency now, aren't we? You know, so if we're talking about that kind of level, consistency is the factor of practice, of strength and conditioning, keeping healthy, your periodization of hitting and, you know, lessons, that type of thing, going into competition. I think it's the consistency that is going to help you get through that a lot better. I don't know, how would you, what would you say?
Yeah, no, I think that's all important. And again, it's funny how you obviously listen to the other person, you sort of resonate, you're like, both of you and I are nodding, and sort of like, yeah, we can see that happening. I guess certainly I'll pose a question, but as I normally do, but give some context to it. I think listening to planning and all that, it's very good, right? We're obviously, a lot of this is going to be very bespoke. So again, for those that are listening, no plan's going to suit one child compared to another player, sorry. But I think for me, I guess again, a lot of this is so much about the individual for me. So we're talking about how athletic they are, how they are mentally. How much would you say the importance of Z player or child in front of you, their sort of passion for the sport is important? So for me, just to, I guess, give a little bit of context to the question, is passion correct, or should this be an obsession for them now they're 10, 11? So that should, you know, should the obsession be like, they want to train, they want to get on court, they want to do the extra miles, they want to go home and watch tennis? Or is obsession actually, you know, too much of a thing, and actually you get too bogged down on it if you've got an 11-year-old in front of you almost spending 10 hours of their day solely focused mentally on tennis? Is that not necessarily the right way to becoming a national champion? Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I think by that time they've already got that built in, haven't they? A lot of this is sort of built in over the first early year, you know, the early years. Passion, you know, it can be seen in different ways. I think positive and negative. We see people getting very negative on the court, but that passion, that is passion, isn't it? Right? It shows enthusiasm. Yeah. It shows, you know, the will to win. And I think that's really important. I think when that actually is lost, I think that's quite toxic, you know, if we're losing that passion. And you know, I kind of think back to friends of mine and previous players, you know, that have got kind of to a level that are very good, and certainly can move on through that you know, those stages fairly well, and they had reached the high ratings as such, but then lost a bit of the love of the game. And then if they lose the love of the game and the fun of the game, then the passion tends to go, and then it all kind of takes a downward turn. So passion is, I think, a key motivator, right? You've got to love the game. So it is to a degree an obsession, but I think you've got to love the game. If it's love, then it becomes obsessive, it depends on how you know, each individual is different. So yeah, passion is very important. And I would just say, you know, if you're enjoying the game, you got to keep going. As soon as you're losing it, it's finding those ways out. And what about yourself?
I'll probably open up another question for another pod. It's interesting when we have all these discussions. I mean, is obsession healthy? You know, I could be obsessive. So I'm obsessively, for example, I don't know, obsessively loving sugar donuts, for example. So in the short term and the long term, it's not good for me, but I absolutely love them. So I think having that fixation on a sport, it can be good, but I think the, you know, encompassing in that, like you say, you've got to have a passion for it. You've got to love it. I mean, I have a passion for golf, for example. I love golf, but I'm not obsessive about it. I can certainly have a break from it and come back to it, and I can still love the game. And, you know, most of the time I love it, other times not so when I'm in the middle of the trees. But I think it's a fine line, I think. I mean, I quite like a player to be obsessive, I guess, a little bit about it, especially if they really want to be a national champion. Because essentially, if you're going to become a national champion, this is potentially your career as well. You might want to become a pro player from this. But having said that, you become almost too obsessive about it. It can flip the other way quite rightly, like you say. You know, I think you still need to have that love for the game, and that's the real benefit to our sport. It's a love hate relationship, isn't it? At the end of the day, you can love it, but gosh, there are some times where you can really hate it. But
just jumping in there, I think it's really. Obsession can be closely linked to addiction as well, couldn't it? Like, you know, it's kind of like,
Madonna's.
You know, if you're addicted to the donut, like you say, it's not very healthy. But, you know, if we're talking about the kind of the 12s to 16s now, they've got to be, if they put all of that time into becoming a national champion, there's probably already a bit of an obsession to the game. But it's whether now the coach, parent, you know, and we'll probably come on that on another podcast probably.
Yeah.
And cover that, but it's that kind of having that right relationship that makes that child take ownership for their game, makes them enjoy the game, and effectively reach the heights that they want to reach. Now, sometimes you're going to find that it's going to reach the goals you want to see, and they might get to that national champion, but there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get disappointed, unfortunately. You know, there's only one national champion. So there's going to be the other side of that where you've put all that time and money and effort and taxiing around to regional competitions and national competitions, and it just hasn't quite got there. So, you know, it's a real tough one. I think they say in the football world, you know, if you fill Wembley Stadium with 90,000 people, maybe one person is going to make that breakthrough. So it's the same in tennis, really, to a degree, you know. So.
No, I think this is really nicely transitions now to probably pause in pod part, you know, the three-year-old to national champion pod on a part one. So I think it's now time to tune into part two, which I think we've now come to a nice conclusion. This is like 10, 11 upwards. So we're now getting into physical, emotional, development stages, hormonal as well. So I'll let you sign off, sir.
Okay, well, thanks very much for listening, everybody, guys. It'd be great to see you in the next one. Tune in, and we'll go through part two. See you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.